This episode of the Android Central podcast is brought to you by MintSim, the best way to get cheap 4G LTE data in the US. Use offer code ACFREESHIP for free first-class shipping on any MintSim purchase. Hey everybody, and welcome to the Android Central podcast for Friday, November 3rd, 2017. My name is Daniel Bader, and I'm joined by... Ooh, where do I begin? Alex Dobie, how are you?
I'm doing good. Yeah, it's been a busy week for me. We've had a lot of events, a lot of new devices. So, good to be here.
This is going to focus on you mostly because you're the only person that's really dealt with the two phones that we're going to spend the majority of the podcast talking about. And then the rest of us are just going to chime in from time to time with terrible jokes, one of whom will be Andrew Martinick. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. I have a cherry lime LaCroix here, as we discussed before we started the show, and it's
so
great.
So jealous.
How many LaCroix do you have?
I only have one, though. We got to keep this tight here, because I need a steady flow of LaCroix, otherwise I just pass out.
Yeah, he just melts in the hot Seattle weather of snow, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I heard it was snowing out there today.
Yeah, it's 35 degrees outside. It's great.
That ebullient voice that you hear is Jerry Hildenbrand. Welcome back. How are you?
Hey, pretty good. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Today we are going to focus on a couple of devices that were raised from the proverbial dead of the embargo this week. The first is the Razer phone, a somewhat interesting and enormous weapon of a smartphone.
Could be used as former, a weapon.
From the former Nexbit people.
Confirmed, could bludgeon a man with a Razer phone.
And a much nicer looking phone, and I think all of our opinions, the HTC U11 Plus, which is not going to grace the US shores. So we'll get started with the Razer phone. Alex, just talk for 30 minutes and tell us why or why not, because we got to drink our LaCroix.
I'm not going to do that, Daniel, but I certainly can start us off on an interesting discussion about the Razer phone.
Or whatever.
Yeah, so the roots of this phone basically come from, we can trace it all the way back through Scott Croyle's career for the past few years, basically. So Scott Croyle was the head of design at HTC. He's in charge of such popular and very well received and very nice looking devices like, to name a few, the 1M7, the 1M8. He left HTC shortly after the M8. He founded Nexbit, which was the cloud phone, with minty colors and a few not so minty colors. They were sold or acqui-hired by Razer about a year or so ago. So we didn't get a direct successor to the Robin. Instead, we got the team that was at Nexbit building the Razer phone. And this is a phone that has a lot of design traits that you can trace back through the Robin and even further back if you want to look at, talk about front-facing speakers and other characteristics, through to the M8 and maybe the M7. So, the way I phrased it in my preview, I think, was that this is kind of like a metallic, more badass-looking version of the Nexbit Robin, and it's targeted at gamers. It is a phone for gamers, but it is a phone that is informed by the preferences that gamers have, as well as a phone for playing games. That's the line there. And that means high specs. That means, big, but not too over-the-top designs. Razer's design heritage in laptops has kind of been the antithesis to your, big glowing, PC case with a glowing skull on the front kind of aesthetic. They've never really gone for that. And there are a lot of high-end gaming laptops that do. Razer have been, their big thing is color. They have Razer Chroma. But their design language has always been a bit more muted. It's been, serious gamer stuff. It's been well-built, but not too over the top. And you can very much see this design language from their laptops carrying over with, of course, the Scott Croyle influence, the Nexbit influence into the Razer phone.
And the funny thing is, if I think about, gamer phone, you kind of expected it to look like that, like
the Acer Predator
tablet with like the chrome grills on the front and like this, all this crazy stuff. And it's like, no, it's kind of overly simple in a way with all of its kind of, it's rounded corners, but it's very like straight corner, straight and not curved. It's just kind of blocky.
Mm-hmm. It's what happens when you have an actual designer making your phone. so we should walk through specs. This is basically, at a base spec level is, you know, has a lot going for it, has a lot of the very highest end stuff out there right now. So 835, 8 gigs of RAM, 64 gigs of storage plus SD. And then you have probably the highlight of this product, which is the new 120 hertz display, I believe the first in an Android phone. So that means higher refresh rates, potentially higher frame rates, which of course is huge for gaming. You also have an NVIDIA G-Sync style synchronization between the GPU and the frame rate that you actually get on the display. And yeah, that's good for gaming. That's good just for making the phone feel smooth and be pleasant to use. It's actually set to 90 hertz by default, but you can turn all the way up to 120. And it's, you know, it's as fast and responsive as any Android phone I've ever used. I would even, you know, I would include Pixel. I would also, I guess, include iPhone in that as well.
So what that's interesting, that spec to me, because you always hear about trying to maintain 60 frames a second on a gaming PC. There's this sort of belief that higher frames per second is always going to result in a better experience, but Android wasn't necessarily built with that in mind. I mean, there have been developments over the last few years, beginning with Jelly Bean, Project Butter was the first step in making Android smoother, and KitKat then doubled down on that. We now, with Oreo, we have, I believe there's actually a something in the latest beta of Android 8.1 where Google is trying to keep the scrolling speed to a consistent level. I mean, Android has had all of these sort of patches over the years to try to make the interface feel smoother. But is tacking on just 120 hertz, is that all that's really needed?
I mean, it's at a certain level, and I'll sort of hand off to Jerry for a bit more of a deep dive on this in a little bit, but at a certain level, when you're talking about smoothness, more frames are just better. There's a kind of an incorrect belief out there that when you're talking about frame rates, basically 60 is the highest you're, I can see that's not true. That, you know, the existence of gaming monitors that people buy that do actually, you know, are visibly smoother is why we have things like that. The reason why it's only taking gaming to kind of get into that is, I mean, you have push against it in terms of content creation. You know, no one making TV or film really likes to push above 30, you know, even 20 above 24 people reckon looks weird in film. So it's really taken, you know, gaming has been, you know, just computing tasks in general has been what's pushed it up to 60 to be more lifelike, because when you're playing a video game, you want it to look as lifelike as possible. That's the whole point of the medium. So higher frame rates are just better. Of course, Razer making a gaming phone makes sense for them to push that forward. And they have partners like Sharp, whose displays they use in their gaming laptops. It's a natural fit for them there. Jerry, can you give us any more background on like pitfalls of doing this in Android? Is it good? Is it bad?
It shouldn't really make a difference. I mean, it's hardware based. It's the software draws on the screen, the screen refreshes, there, that's independent. And I'm going to assume that the hardware is up to the task. So that's part that should never slow down. It should always be fine, the refresh rate.
You've also got a hell of a thermal system in here, they say best in class. I mean, this thing, I've used it a lot today, doesn't, you know, I've yet to notice it getting particularly warm. So you have that, and you also have a massive 4,000 milliamp hour battery. So even if you are pushing more frames, you've got more juice to go around.
Now, you've got it in your hands. Is it vented?
It is.
I know it's got a fancy heat pipe set up.
Unless you count the speaker grills, it's not vented. The speaker grills are plastic, so with like a, it looks like kind of a foam behind it. So I wouldn't count those as vents.
That's what I'm wondering. I mean, I saw...
It's also black, so you know, not the best color for heat dissipation.
Yeah. Because I would think that what they have there would be crazy without just venting it to open air somewhere. And if that's the case, that's got to run very, very cool.
I think part of the thing there is you mentioned the crazy heat pipe. You also have the fact the thing is just big. So there's more
big
space for whatever. Yeah, big and metal and whatever, you know, more space for, you know, just more space for over which you can dissipate the heat, even if it is black.
So you also said, you know, at the beginning that this is both a phone for gamers and a gaming phone. And, you know, we've seen companies over the years, starting all the way back in 2011 with Sony Ericsson and the Xperia Play,
way before that. We want to talk about the NVIDIA N-Gage, surely.
Well, sure, but I mean with Android. The N-Gage was an interesting experiment, and so was the Xperia Ray, to be honest. And this year, Motorola released a mod that allows you to put your Z Phone or Moto Z Phone in a gaming mod and actually play these games. But Razer is clearly moving this needle forward and trying to optimize games to run really well on this high refresh rate screen, right? It's not just a, here's a really powerful phone and, you know, you find the titles that work best for you.
No, so they're working, you know, there are a few titles preloaded. They said, I think something like 20% will just work because of the way they're coded. There are, of course, some games that are either hard-coded to stick at 30 or FPS or stick at 60. So they're going, you know, Razer obviously has a huge presence in gaming. They have the clout to go to publishers and say, look, we have this great phone. Maybe uncap your frame rate, please. So there's that. The other side of that is, like, you know, we talk about the Xperia Play, we talk about the N-Gage. Every phone that has tried to be a gaming phone has basically failed very quickly. So the idea is, okay, it's a phone for playing games, but it isn't just that. It's also supposed to be just a good phone as well. Supposed to be, I guess, being the key part of that phrase.
And that's kind of the interesting thing, because we heard, I mean, I read a lot of comments, a lot of talk on Twitter about, well, it's not really a gaming phone kind of thing. And I think that there's maybe something lost in that description from Razer. Like, part of it is really just having that, like, I don't know, mentality or something, like just the styling and the types of things that it has in it are cool. But I think some of the nuance was lost on a lot of people, thinking, like, up to this point, not knowing what was going on, they were kind of expecting a new, like, super badass version of the Xperia Play.
Maybe, but
Well, as Alex said, like, nobody wants that. They've all failed.
Yeah,
hard.
The market has rejected that.
Tell that to the gaming nerds on Twitter. I don't know.
Well, so, Alex, is this a phone people are going to want? $700 US, 700 euro. It's expensive. It doesn't have any carriers in the US. There's only one carrier in Europe that's supporting it.
There's one carrier in for the rest of the world. So Three, is owned by Hutchison, which is the Three brand for, you know, Europe and Asia, and they're the global exclusive carrier partner. So we're talking Europe, and we're talking they haven't spoken about Asia yet. But I would be amazed if this thing didn't come to Asia, given Hutchison's footprint over there and the fact that it's just a gaming phone.
So my question is, where are the esports tie-ins? Because that's how I would really market this device if I were smart, and I'm not. But this screams to me, Clash Royale. You know, that is not a hardcore game by any means, but that's the game that people are playing on phones. These are the new esports games. Has Razer talked at all about esports associating with the Razer or with Razer phone?
Razer's always kind of had, you know, the sponsorship thing going on with various people, and actually funny to see OnePlus coming out today with, I think it's Fnatic, that they have some kind of promotional thing for the OnePlus 5T. Mm. So kind of funny to see that after, you know, Razer maybe de-emphasizing that a little bit in their phone announcements. Maybe that'll come later. I mean, you would imagine if you're Razer, if you go to the trouble of something which they mentioned in the press conference yesterday, which we completely forgot, buying Ouya all those years ago before they even went anywhere near Nexbit, and then buying Nexbit. This is probably not going to be a one-off for them. This is going to be a long-term project, and I'm sure we'll see, just as the products evolve over time, the marketing will evolve over time as well.
And I think that that's a good point, that this is just part of Razer's overall strategy. I mean, they already make a killing in all of these different... people thought it was weird when they went from just making computer accessories to making laptops. You know, they thought that was a weird jump, and it's just another part of their portfolio. And if you think about, if they're trying to market to, you know, a very specific set of people in this very enthusiastic gaming community, why not? I mean, all of these people are already buying high-end phones because they're, you know, they're hardware junkies, spec junkies. They like the design of the Razer stuff. Why not make a phone that they could buy rather than, you know, buying a Galaxy S8 Plus or something like that?
And by the way, at the same time, with, you know, not just making it a reimagined Xperia Play or whatever, with making it the kind of device it is. Maybe you scoop up some of the phone nodes at the same time and you have that enthusiast following that was there around phones like the Nexfit Robin back in the day.
So getting back to Daniel's question, though, like how does, especially in Europe, like how does this line up? Do you really think people are buying this versus a Galaxy S8 Plus or something like that? Of course, coming from, like even just looking at the market that Razer is actively going after, like the spec hounds, the gamers, stuff like that, not the general consumers.
I think they'll carve out a niche. I mean, they're never going to get anywhere near as mainstream as a GS8. That's, you know, that's just obvious. But at the other end of the line, you have, I mean, it's interesting that 3 is carrying this because 3 also has the Mate 10 Pro over here, the Huawei Mate 10 Pro, same price that they're going to be carrying. Not sure if the same price on contract, but it is the exact same unlocked price. And it depends what kind of consumer you're going after. I think there will be they'll carve themselves out probably a decent small niche. But you know, the reasons why they won't necessarily sell this to the general consumer, or why maybe the general consumer should consider something like a Mate 10 or a GS8 Plus as opposed to this, we've got to get into kind of the pros and cons of this phone to do that.
So one thing that also occurred to me based on our sister site Windows Central reporting on the Razer phone is that the company is going after its install base of Windows users, of people who build their own phones, build their own computers, part of a growing community of gaming enthusiasts that rely on Razer products. And a lot of people at Windows Central were very excited. Dan Rubino, Jez Corden, Richard Devine. I mean, these are people who have only recently been forced, kicking and screaming in some cases, away from Windows Phone. And here's Razer with this soft pillow being like, we will take you. We will give you all of your Microsoft things. You know, Microsoft has all of the apps on the Play Store now, and we will encourage your gaming proclivities at the same time.
And interesting as well to see Microsoft picking up the retail exclusive for this in the US. Very smart move from them, I think. They obviously have the hardcore audience there as well. And you've got to imagine that a company like Razer would be more than willing to stick a few Microsoft apps on their phone out of the box to get it on store shelves, especially in the absence of a carrier in the US.
Right. So $700, this is compatible with AT&T and T-Mobile. It's not a CDMA device, if I'm mistaken, right?
And every other GSM carrier in the world. It's just that the US is weird like that.
Right, of course. So what's your final take? You have one in your hand. It's a big brute. It's got a massive 4,000 milliamp hour battery. Yay or nay?
It's somewhere in the middle for me, and it depends what kind of consumer you are. And that sounds like a cop-out, but I'll get to less of a cop-out answer now. So this phone is very well designed. It's very fun to use. It's a nice piece of hardware. It's extremely fast. I think there's been kind of a compromise in the direction of making it this gaming phone, in the direction of pushing specific features at that price point. So, for example, you got the screen. The screen can push 120 frames per second, but daylight visibility is just okay. You have something that's marketed as not just a phone for gamers, but then you have core phone functionality like the camera on this, not good in low light, unfortunately. So I think this is a great portable multimedia and gaming device. It is not what I would call a great phone for the money. But it may well be a great purchase for you, depending on what you value, but just know that you're not getting water resistance. You're not getting you're getting a display that is very, very fast and very, very smooth, but not the best to use outdoors. And you're not getting equivalent low light performance from your camera that you'd be getting from a GS8 or a Huawei Mate 10 that sell for the same price.
Jerry, if I may ask, what is the state of gaming development on Android today? In the sense that, is it easy for a developer to... I know Unity and other cross-platform development tools exist, but is it easy for a developer to build a single game and deploy it with equal quality to both iOS and Android and not lose anything in the translation?
I don't want to go as far as saying easy to make a, you know, the same game for both platforms, because it's not easy to make a game for Android that everyone can play. It would be easy to make a game that the, you know, Galaxy S8 or the Pixel or the HTC U11 could play. But then you ignore 75% of the Android phones out there that wouldn't be able to play a game designed for the latest hardware. So there's a lot of compromises they have to make. And Unity is not difficult to program with. It's difficult to master. So, you know, no shade at the developers that are using Unity. That's not, you know, it's hard to make a good game. It's fairly easy to make a game, but the games for Android, there's a lot of untapped potential because the ecosystem is so, I mean, you got people are still using the first Moto G and go to the Play Store and they want to download a game and, oh, it doesn't work, and they're going to get mad.
Doesn't it behoove a developer then to just optimize it, the AAA titles for the top, you know, 5% or 1% of hardware?
I would think so. I'm sure there's a reason. Maybe the thing, you know, it's hard to make money with Android. And guys, if you're listening, we don't like to spend money on apps. And this is a, you know, a big we. All of us together, there's a problem with the platform. Maybe not you or not me. So maybe that's the turnoff. I don't know why people are. I mean, as soon as you all, you know, start gaming phone, all right, League of Legends, that there's a Mac client. Well, it wouldn't be extremely difficult to rebuild that for Linux and ARM, put it in a container, and you can reboot the Razer phone to the League of Legends phone and hook a PlayStation controller up to it and play online. That's possible and not extremely difficult, but there's probably no money in it.
What's interesting, I mean, just to kind of digress a little bit, Sony announced PlayLink the other week, and this is an experience where you put a game or you download a game on the PlayStation 4, and the majority of the controls are done on your phone using an app. Yep. But it's aimed at cooperation, it's aimed at teams, and it's aimed at parties. And I find this fascinating because Sony for so long has struggled with its PlayStation tie-ins on Android. You can use your phone as remote play, as a controller, but that's never really been enough to hook people. It's never really been enough for me to say, I want a Sony phone to play, you know, if I have a PlayStation 4. Razer is in a kind of a similar boat here, where it really has to convince people that if you're an existing Razer user, you should buy a Razer phone. But it's more of a brand tie-in than any actual functionality. You know, aside from that 120 hertz screen, Alex, I wonder what is the hook here? Is it just brawn, or, you know, is there a little bit of like long term? Is there a strategy here?
I would say yes on both counts. I think part of the appeal here, and it might seem like a superficial thing, but it's worth saying. I think part of the appeal is the Razer brand and the design that you get with that. It's also meant to be a great device for media consumption. Aside from the gaming angle, you have two really good front-facing speakers on this thing. But at the same time, like the stuff that you could do in a quote-unquote gaming phone that they haven't done in this. But like I say, this is their first phone. You've got to draw a line somewhere, and I'm sure we'll see something next year that, you know, fleshes out a lot of these ideas a bit more. The main criticism that I would have is, okay, on the one hand, you know, you have all these compromises I guess a few significant compromises that you have to make to push the gaming angle at the expense of it just being a good phone. And then on the other hand, you're targeting this as two enthusiasts, whether they're phone enthusiasts or gaming enthusiasts, and you're missing features like wireless charging. Okay, there's a technical limitation there. You're not running the latest version of the OS, and again, you don't have the cutting edge camera features that you get in a lot of other phones. So you're going after the enthusiast market, and there are some key enthusiast features that you just don't have.
I have to think that there's something planned up. I know Alex has played. I play a lot of Fallout, and with Fallout 4, there's a companion app for iOS or Android, and you install it on your phone, and it's real time. It's not that handy. It doesn't do a lot, but it could. It could show you the map of the game you're playing, or, you know, like an inventory management. There's a lot of room there for not necessarily a game, but to work with a game that people who like the Razer brand probably already have and love.
I can't be the only one that's having flashbacks to the NVIDIA Shield tablet, right?
No. No, this is, yeah.
I mean, that was a tablet that was like, yes, it's a good overall tablet, and especially because it was playing at a different level. It was a cheap tablet for the market, and it was a small tablet that had, like, usefulness, you know, outside of gaming. But it had this pitch of, look, we're the name that you know. There's a lot of horsepower in here. It's designed for the type of people that care about what graphics card is in their desktop, and they care about having an NVIDIA graphics card. And they had a ton of back end on that as well to do GeForce streaming directly to the tablet, control remote desktop gaming to your home desktop. All of these, I mean, they still run this huge Shield store where you can buy games that are optimized for the Tegra. And of course, it's an Android tablet, so it's starting, you know, it's jumping into the water with an anchor tied to its ankle. But there's something to be said for the fact that this was not a good strategy, even for something that's not your main device. Like, that was for a tablet, whereas people take phones so seriously. And when you're talking about these missing things, that means a lot more to people when you only buy one phone and you only carry one phone.
I think the key difference with the NVIDIA Shield is that whole device, as much as there was this ecosystem play from them, you know, in terms of the store and stuff, the whole point of that device really was as a vehicle for NVIDIA Silicon.
And NVIDIA services, of course. Yeah.
You know, they couldn't make a new Shield tablet because they're not really making tablet CPUs anymore. So that's what got rid of. And of course, you're not going to find an NVIDIA tablet with a Qualcomm chip in it. So what can they do?
Maybe Razer doesn't care about people who want a good camera. They care about people who want a smartphone, but also want it to work with the things they like.
Right.
I mean, you can't throw that idea away.
Oh, I absolutely think that there is brand value, huge brand value in the Razer name. And there is that crossover of people that want high end phones that like the Razer name and they'll buy it. But I'm just saying that we've seen many of those same elements in the couple of NVIDIA Shield tablets where you're kind of like, and the same thing with the Shield TV at the same time. You're like, oh, it's a great set-top box and it does this gaming stuff. And then people go, oh, well, I can buy a Fire TV stick for $79.
I'll go a step further. You remember the Shield Portable?
Of course.
If you hooked up GameStream and you sat down and you installed the NVIDIA software on your computer, I'd go sit out on the couch and play games from my computer, and it worked great. And I can't understand why people didn't love it, but they didn't.
I think because it's really hard to sell a product like that unless your name is Nintendo. That's what it comes down to. You know, even Sony really struggled in that, just with a dedicated gaming device.
If your name's Razer, maybe you can do it.
I mean, I'm gonna play devil's advocate here for a moment. Nobody wants to play AAA titles on a flat screen with no controls. Like, it's just not a thing. I don't know if.
Yeah, I mean, you know, even the Shield tablet was at least 8 inches and had a stand and, like, a great gaming controller.
Yeah. I just, like, Apple touts the fact that all these AAA titles launch on the iPhone all the time and that developers love developing for iPhone. But at the end of the day, you know, you're not seeing Call of Duty World War II launching on iOS 11. Like, yeah, the A11 is powerful and, you know, blah, 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 but you're not gaming the way that you're gaming on an Xbox One X or a PlayStation 4 or even a Switch. Like, look at Super Mario Odyssey. I've been playing this game in, like, every free minute I've had this past week, I've been playing it on my Switch portable, not even hooking it up to a TV. This is some, like, we know the hardware inside the Switch. We know that it's no more powerful than the Shield tablet. but barely more powerful than the Shield tablet. I mean, we're talking about basically an NVIDIA X1 chip in there, like not a particularly powerful piece of silicone in late 2017, but it's optimized to hell, and it's able to run these AAA titles developed by Nintendo for this hardware. Will Nintendo launch Super Mario Odyssey or Zelda Breath of the Wild on any other platform?
No,
obviously not.
They want you to buy a Switch.
Exactly. So, I mean, I love the idea of the Razer phone. I think it's nice that Razer kept the jobs of all these Nexbit people, but I don't know. You know, Scott Croyle is a very smart guy, and he's starting his own consultancy. So maybe he saw, you know, he wanted to complete this project, and he saw, you know, a brighter future elsewhere.
And it also wasn't just Scott Croyle there, you know, there's a whole team behind.
Right.
I think it's easy to look at this in a, you know, in harsh light as, you know, a first product and judge it as a failure. I think, you know, it's imperfect. It's definitely not, you know, that there are, you're making a phone for the first time, you're going to make some mistakes. But as the beginning of something else from Razer, you know, this strikes me as a very calculated move and maybe the beginning of something bigger from them in this space.
And I think they're willing to sink a lot of money into it. I mean, I hate to say it because I'm a PC gamer, but consoles have won. Nobody wants to spend $2,000 on graphics cards to sit around and play Destiny 2 when it plays good enough on an Xbox or PlayStation 4.
And an Xbox or PlayStation is basically a gaming PC these days in terms of the experience, right, as well as the technology.
So, I mean, maybe they know that not next year, not 5 years from now, but eventually the market for gaming keyboards and mice and joysticks is just not going to be there. So they're willing to spend money to explore new areas.
One path that could be quite interesting that I see for this is down kind of an NVIDIA Switch, and a Nintendo Switch kind of route.
That wouldn't surprise
me. Yeah, I think that could be very interesting, either plug into a monitor or a TV, and they could do that relatively easily from, you know, a technology standpoint.
I would love, you know, maybe this Qualcomm stuff will change, and NVIDIA and Razer can get together and make a 6-inch Razer Shield crossover device that plugs into your TV and is a Nintendo Switch. That I would love to see it. I don't know that it would sell, but I mean, I would love to see somebody do it.
The Shield portable and Shield tablet plugged directly into your TV, yep, went into a lean back experience and had a great controller, and they sold 14 of them.
And they weren't a phone though.
Wow.
And there's a lot of reasons why they couldn't do that with a phone, but maybe those are going to change.
Yeah.
I mean, I just want to be clear. I'm not criticizing the Razer phone as a product or even Razer as a company. I'm just noting that there seems to be a very clear bifurcation between mobile gaming and the titles that are aimed at mobile gaming and consoles. And Nintendo has done the best job of any company in bridging that gap. And I think that will be a trend going forward. And Alex, you're right. I mean, we've seen with Samsung and DeX, we've seen with recently Huawei and the Mate 10 and Mate 10 Pro, there are desktop experiences to be found on phones because they're so powerful. It's just a matter of figuring out how to interface them properly. Right now they're being used for productivity, but that could be for gaming very easily.
What if Razer is the brand that makes a Windows desktop on an Android phone? They say Windows will run on the hardware in that phone.
True. Could be.
I mean, there's lots of reasons that we can fish, and we're really trying to think of ways that, you know, this can be a good idea, because on the surface it's just another Android phone, and there are so many just another Android phones. But somebody somewhere has to have a vision of why they did this. So I wish them luck.
It isn't, I my criticism of this phone isn't to do with the idea. It's to do with the execution.
I get that.
There are bits of it like, you know, and it is all geared around making it you know, the compromises being in the direction of making it really good for high-end gaming. So the screen meant they couldn't get Oreo on there because they had to design so much of this from the very beginning around getting the 120Hz stuff running. You know, the camera, obviously Razer doesn't have a massive backlog of camera patents that they can just roll out. They obviously don't have anywhere near as many camera engineers as, say, Samsung or LG or even HTC. This is, that kind of polish ultimately only really comes with time. And we see these growing pains with companies like OnePlus, we've seen it in the past, and this year with Essential as well. It's just going to take them some time, but I think they are in it for the long run.
And yeah, make no mistake, I'm the one that's reaching. You know, Alex and Daniel are being pragmatic and practical, and I'm the one who's just reaching into a barrel. I don't disagree with either one of you. I just hope that there's something that makes this not just another Android phone. Maybe not this one, but maybe the next one.
So, I mean, final thought for me on this, it's really interesting that a lot of hardware companies in the PC space, in the gaming space, feel they need a phone to center their businesses, right? And I'm, you know, I don't know how many phones Razer expects to sell in its first generation. We see with Essential and the, you know, $200 price drop, Essential struggling to sell phones. A lot of peripheral Android manufacturers that aren't, basically everyone that's not Samsung is struggling to sell phones in volume. Lenovo just posted its Q4 earnings and it lost over $1 billion from its mobile unit again for the 27th quarter in a row. I mean, this is not easy. This is really not easy. It's but at the same time, Motorola is going to release more phones next year. It's probably going to release 20 phones. Sony is still releasing phones, despite not having turned a profit in the mobile, in that mobile space for a very long time. You can expect Razer to lose money on the Razer phone, probably a lot of money. But there's something to be said for having that hero product in its pocket, so to speak, and to be able to say, we are a hardware company that also has a phone. And to me, that's interesting.
They're making so much money on laptops and on mice, I guess, mainly. You know,
right.
Who knows which side of the business is actually making the more money. You know, there's a lot of money in accessories, obviously. But they have that to rely on. And that's a key in, you know, a key thing when you're getting into the phone business. You need massive amounts of money from other business areas to plow into it. That's what did HTC in over the years. That's the difference between them and, you know, a Samsung or LG or you know, even OnePlus that has the financial might of Oppo behind it.
I will admit I sat back with everyone else and laughed at Apple making a phone 10 years ago. So I no longer laugh at any company who makes a phone because I am wrong.
Well, if you can sell 50 million of them a quarter, then you're onto something. But you mentioned HTC, and that is our next topic. We're going to talk about the HTC U11 Plus and all the good things inside that phone. But first, a word from our sponsor, Thrifter. We've talked about Thrifter every week. This is the site, this is the service that sends deals into your inbox every morning. It's the website that gives you the best gifts for the holiday. It's the place that you can find the weirdest discounts on all your Halloween costumes, as we talked about last week. And this week, we're moving into Black Friday. Yes, it's only November 3rd, but companies are already launching their Black Friday deals, and you can find all of those at Thrifter. So as we do every week, we're going to go around and we're going to highlight our favorite deal from the Thrifter front page. I'll go first this week because on the theme of gaming, the Xbox One X launches next week. But the Xbox One S, as a result, is getting a steep discount. You can actually get an Xbox One S, a 500 gigabyte version, with a controller and one of six games. Sorry, with two controllers, one of six games, just for $249, which is kind of insane if you think about it.
Just how
much power we were talking about. These are basically PCs, pretty powerful. You can get either the Ultimate Halo Bundle, you can get Forza 3, you can get Madden NFL 18, and you can decide between one of six games, including Call of Duty World War II that just came out today, Assassin's Creed Origins, which came out last week and is apparently phenomenal, Destiny 2, which will ruin your life, don't buy it, Forza Motorsport 7, FIFA 18, Madden NFL 18, or NBA 2K18. Lots of great deals there. So I have an Xbox One. I have no reason to buy an One S or a One X, but I am pretty much guaranteed to be buying Call of Duty World War II, even though I know I'll never play it. And you can check that out. It's actually a Walmart exclusive, this deal. So check it out at thrifter.com. What about you, Andrew? What are you looking at?
Something much, 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 much cheaper, and something that you could buy like five of these and put them in, you know, put them in stockings or give them to people, you know, for a Hanukkah gift or whatever. Aki cell phone tripod, like universal holder thingy, $8 to get a little mini fold-up tripod with an adjustable phone clamp on top. Typically, you have to buy these things separately. Like you buy, you know, the tripod, and then you have to screw something else on it that doubles the price of it. This is $8, and you get one of these things, and it's got a ball head on it, so you can set it up. They say that it's strong enough to hold up a camera as well. I don't know about that, but super useful for phones. Maybe you could save somebody from using a selfie stick. I mean, every person you save from using a selfie stick is a worthwhile cause.
Yeah, God bless the person who buys one of these instead of a selfie stick. I'm not even seeing this on the homepage, but I believe you.
Well, I mean, I'm not lying, but...
No, because you would never lie to me during the Thrifter segment. That would just be, that'd be bad.
Any other time of the podcast is acceptable.
Exactly.
Correct.
But there you go. Alex, what are you looking at?
Well, since you guys both stole the picks that I was going to use, both first and second... I'm now looking at $10 off your $50 grocery order from Walmart, and looking at this post here, there's a lot of great groceries that we're looking at. There's a picture of some apples. I think I see some limes there.
And when you go to buy your Xbox One S, you can get some groceries.
You can, yeah. You can get some carrots. I see some tomatoes, lettuce. That's pretty good as well. Strawberries in the background, some cream. You get some cream with your Xbox. Spring onions, peppers.
I see the faintest line of a pineapple as well.
Pineapple at the back. We're not sure what's going on with that.
Very eclectic.
But if you spend $50 on a bunch of pineapples at the same time as your Xbox One X order, indeed any other purchase, $10 off with this code on thrifter.com.
Man, you're out the door at less than $300.
Which is what you want from a Walmart, obviously. So go there, buy some apples. There's a fruit in here I can't identify. It's the one to the right of the apples. This is great radio. There's strawberries as well. Buy cream and strawberries and pineapples and save $10.
I think those are avocados to go with the limes to make guacamole. Because there's cilantro. There's parsley.
Maybe.
Oh, yeah. No, these are all, we're just here. Naming food. This is compelling.
There's actually no picture. We're just naming vegetables.
We're just winging it.
Thrifter.com. Yeah.
All right, Jerry, what's on your list?
I kind of like these TP-Link smart plugs. I can't find them on Thrifter, but they're on our front page from Thrifter. So that's why I was scrolling through here. But anyway, they're smart plugs. You don't need a hub. They work with Google Now or your Alexa, and you don't have to wire them. You plug them into your existing outlets, and they sit on top of it. And they're $30 a piece, and that's a little bit more expensive than the ones you can wire, but again, you don't have to wire it. You won't die. Just plug it in and go. And I've got a house full of them. I've got, I think every plug now and every light switch in my house is a smart plug, and it's amazing. You know, if you're into that kind of stuff.
Let's see. I see them here, and they're $30 a piece, right?
Yes.
Yep.
They're $30 a piece, and they are literally plug and play. You TP-Link, if you plug it in and you open up Google Assistant on your phone and you go, or the Google Home app on your phone, and go to the hardware section and press the button, it will find them and set them up. And you can say, okay, hot word, turn on the light in the living room, and it will.
Yeah, I've been reached out to many times by people who appreciate us not setting off their Echoes or G Homes as a result. So we are very conscientious. Thank you, Jerry. Thank you, Thrifter, for sponsoring the podcast. Head there if you are interested in receiving an email in your inbox every day with all these great deals and more. And the Thrifter Black Friday Hub is now open. So check that out. Okay, on to the final topic of the day. This is a twofer. We're going to talk about the HTC U11 Plus, another phone that has only been touched by Alex Dobie. Tell us about this. So this is really interesting. This is the follow-up to the HTC U11, which I think we all agree is one of the better phones and underappreciated phones of 2017. This does a couple things better, clearly, and it also is worse in one way in that three of the four of us are not going to be able to buy it. So tell us a little bit about it.
So this is, I mean, you talk about it being a successor to the U11, and it kind of is. There's also an element of this being sort of a successor to the U Ultra, which we saw, you know, the release timing was a bit different the last cycle. Exactly, that thing. So this is their answer to like a bigger version of this phone. They're also going to an 18:9 aspect ratio. It's easier to hold on to. The sides are a little bit more angular. It's just a more modern interpretation of that design, and with a few really welcome hardware upgrades as well. So extra 2 gigs of RAM. In the UK, it'll be 6 + 128 as standard. You have the same great camera that we had from the U11 as well. It's running Oreo out of the box. And you have probably one of the coolest looking glass backs on any phone that I've seen. You got a transparent, or at least partially transparent, translucent finish to it. So you have the multi-layered glass, but below that you can see things like the camera module and the NFC antenna. And you have a lot of, you know, there have been a few phones that have done like custom transparent, completely transparent layouts. This looks way better because you still have kind of the reflectivity of the glass, but at the same time it just obscures just enough for it to be a really neat design touch. And you can, you know, the big thing that you can see is the sort of oversized NFC antenna that they have in there that really is a design feature as much as anything. So you have that in this more modern, sort of up-to-date, you know, typical 2017 flagship sort of, you know, aspect from the front, with everything that we already love from the U11, and you know, Oreo just to make it better out of the box.
Alex, did you get to see the, I think they call it silver, the one that's blue and green and silver, depending on how you look at it?
I saw two colors. I'm not sure if they announced any more than that. The only two I'm aware of are the black and the translucent one.
I thought for sure I saw a third color that I thought they called it silver, but it's like that red that it's depends on how you look at it. And God, I hope I'm right. And I might order one of those, even if it won't work completely here.
No, it'll work on you know, GSM carriers over there. It's just that, you know, you'll need to import it, and there'll be, I guess, no official warranty with that. So you're kind of out on a limb. And again, HTC's hitting that, you know, £700 price point with this. So it's £700, I should say, price point with this. So it's competitive from that perspective as well. It's easy to say this is the phone they should have had like 5 months ago, and maybe it is. And we can get into the backstory of how this phone came to be and what may have influenced that later, you know, in a couple of minutes' time. It looks like a good solid phone. You know, a lot of it is a known quantity. It's the U11. You know, we liked everything the U11 did. We liked the way it performed. We loved the pictures that it took. HTC software is a little bit more polished. It's running Oreo now. There've been some visual touch-ups. It's not drastically different, but it is more up to date. There are Squircle icons now, for whatever that's worth. It's like a new. They're basically building out their version of the edge panels because apparently that's the thing we needed. Except activated by squeeze or like a shortcut wheel that you can use, which is fine. But of course, Edge Sense you can remap to whatever you want anyway, so it's no big deal there. It's just a good all round 6-inch. Phone with a giant battery with a great camera. You really in late 2017 could not have asked more of HTC than this phone.
You know, it really, I mean, we talked about this a ton when you were working on this write-up. It's really unfortunate that the U11 got kind of not a bad rap, but just kind of got lost in the shuffle, considering, you know, the looks matter, and the first impression of the U11 was, okay, HTC made another phone that looks the same as the other phone that's, you know, kind of this bigger, old school kind of look with a 16:9 LCD on the front and the front fingerprint sensor. And like, it just didn't look modern. And that made a lot of people overlook a phone that in the US is, you know, $599, because you can always get $50 off with one of those coupon codes that they just throw everywhere. So for $600, and, you know, just before the time where phones started, you know, or at the time when phones started to get way more expensive in this flagship segment at $700 or $800, you know, it's crazy that it got overlooked as much as it did. So this little, you know, bump, not really a successor in total, but just this little bump to change the way it looks, you know, it's just superfluous, but it makes a big difference.
And it isn't just about the way it looks, and that there are certain things about the sort of physicality of this phone that are easy to overlook just in pictures. So you have the fact that, you know, if you ever used a U11, you know that the sides of it are very curved, they're very slippery. Part of the reason why the phone is so slippery isn't because of the glass back, it's because of the sides around it as well.
It comes with a case in the box to help.
And I believe this one will as well. I need to double check, but I think it will. But they've got rid of that this time around. The sides are more, I think, in line with, from memory, I think the HTC 10 had this style. So they're a bit flatter. They have the chamfers around the front. Just so much easier to hold onto it because of that. Of course, it's narrower than the U11 as well. So you have flatter sides, easier to hold onto. It's not as wide, it's, you know, which also makes it easier to hold onto. So, you know, obviously you got a big screen, you got a glass back. It's going to be slippery to an extent, but, you know, all these steps they've taken to mitigate that, and you get a bigger screen, or at least a, you know, comparable size screen, different aspect ratio, with you know, a significant battery jump. You're going from 3,000 milliamp hours in the U11 to 4,000 milliamp hours in the U11.
Yeah,
Plus.
That's huge.
That's a big deal, and we, you know, we already know we got pretty good battery life out of the regular U11 with that you know, run of the mill battery. Everything, you know, is looking like the U11 Plus is going to be a really, really good performer there.
So that makes it seem like the phone would be really big. Like, how does it actually manage compared to like a GS8 Plus, Note 8, Pixel 2 XL kind of size? Because it's obvious in V30 for that matter, because it's the same size and aspect ratio screen at 6 inches.
I don't think I actually took a picture of this particular phone next to the 2 XL. Ironically, we'll get to why later, but I want to say it's physically probably about the same size as the 2 XL, maybe a little bit smaller, but it is, because of the more angular sides, I think easier to pick up and hold onto than the Pixel 2 XL.
Cause the regular U11 is not small, you know, it's kind of unabashedly wide, tall, and thick for its screen size.
Yeah,
so I didn't know if the change in aspect ratio helped.
It does to an extent, and you get a lot from the fact that this phone is narrower than the U11. That makes, you know, you can get away with a tall phone more than you can get away with a wide phone. And, you know, HTC's made a lot of, you know, a few small decisions in the right direction to make that focus for this phone. Like in the context of other phones, I don't know, I would say it's like a chunkier V30 maybe in terms of the size. That would be how I put it. But of course, the V30 has very, very different sidewalls and very different glass and stuff. So
just to close the loop for you here, I pulled up the spec sheets compared to the 2 XL. So the U11 Plus is almost the same height, but is narrower and roughly the same thickness, but it's a bit heavier. It's almost 190 grams, which is pretty heavy. But so, you know, that width does make a difference.
I actually realized I just misspoke about the battery. It's actually 3930 or something like that. So not quite 4,000, but, you know, near enough 4,000.
Close enough.
And that probably contributes a lot to the weight that you're seeing there.
Yeah.
So the other thing here that I'm looking at the spec sheet, because I had the same idea as Andrew. I wanted to be like, oh, I'm going to compare this to the Pixel 2 XL and be all smart and stuff. But I'll still try to be smart. This will work in the US, on T-Mobile and AT&T, because it supports band 4, which is AWS. It supports band 12, which is 700 megahertz. And it also supports band 5, which is used by AT&T, I believe. but it doesn't support band 30 or any of the other kind of obscure bands that are used in the US, and it doesn't support band 66, which is AWS 3. So service will be good, but it wouldn't be ideal. It probably doesn't have the same carrier aggregation support as many of the phones sold in the US because it's tuned for Europe and Asia, but it'll work out of the box. So that's kind of cool. And yeah, I mean, I really think it looks great. It looks super, super nice.
Perhaps a reason to be optimistic about HTC next year. We'll see.
I wish I could reach everybody and say, hey, one year, one time, don't buy Samsung, buy HTC. And chances are you're going to like it. And you'll know that this company never went away. We just stopped buying them because their phones have always been good. They just aren't as pretty.
Yeah, but there's so many good phones out there. Like, you have to be so good to differentiate yourself these days. And without a carrier, it doesn't matter. Yep. I mean, you can release the U11 yep. Plus in the US, but it'll do nothing because it has no carrier support.
It has no carriers over here either.
Right, but how many? Like, the percentage of people who buy phones on financing through carriers in the UK and Europe is much lower than in the US.
Not really. You're still looking at the overwhelming majority of the purchases are made through, if not a carrier store, then car phone warehouse. You know, online sales are a thing as well, but more often than not, you'd be looking at, you know, buying on contract through car phone.
Yeah, it's different.
The US is wildly in the other direction, but still not having, you know, I don't want to take away from the fact that not having any carriers for your new phone in the market like the UK is still very bad.
Yeah, but the next time you visit the States, me and you are going to an AT&T store, and I'm going to let them nail your feet to the floor and just, yeah, you'll see the misery that we go through here.
There's a lot of misery here too as well. I don't like going to carrier stores.
Well, Jerry, you also reported a report from Reporter Report. You reported something from OpenSignal this week saying that the U.S. is like 66th in terms of speed, yep. LTE speed in the in the world, which is pretty sad, and that LTE networks are not getting faster, but they're getting more ubiquitous. So,
That was kind of eye-opening. I'm a little less bummed about our LTE networks here in the States because I can see clearly that the focus is on availability. And now that everybody else is focusing on availability, I love it when I hit that spot where, you know, I got the right phone on the right network and I'm 180, 190 megabits per second. I run speed test after speed test and love it. But 25, 30 is good enough. Let's be honest. You can stream 4K and it's important that you have it everywhere. And even I live out in the woods and I have to go way off on the dirt road before I no longer have good phone service now.
I mean, then there's the other thing. I was in New York yesterday, and there were times where I could barely use my phone when connected to T-Mobile. So now that's still a problem. And
isn't Qualcomm's new stuff supposed to help with that? They're working on a way to switch better so that it's not as bad when a tower gets overcrowded? Or is that just wishful thinking that I've heard?
I mean, it comes down to capacity. It doesn't really matter. Like, you can have, you can aggregate as many carriers as you want. You can have as much low band spectrum as you want. But at the end of the day, if your tower is overloaded, there's not a whole lot you can do. I mean, you can mitigate it. Sure. You can try to lower multipath. You can do a whole bunch of things to, you know, you can use small cells. That's what a lot of the networks in the US are doing now. They're putting small cells almost everywhere. Yeah. If you're near a stadium, there's a truck that is pointing a signal in your direction. Like, it's great. And that's only going to get more prevalent. In Canada, actually, this week, Bell, which is the third largest provider in the country, said that it's going to start installing small cells in newspaper boxes around the city of Toronto as a pilot project so that when you go downtown and you're working in a really dense, tower, you're going to get service because it's basically just putting antennas inside these buildings. It's crazy to think that, but hey, I mean, that's the next step, right?
And that infrastructure is all going to help when eventually 5G rolls around.
Yeah, and that points to the interesting part of this is that it's still a much more manual thing where it's very case by case, you know, not even just city by city, but, you know, parts of cities and specific, you know, a lot of these big cities, they're going in and looking on like a block by block basis of how badly things can deteriorate just going around a corner because of all the interference in all these different buildings and things. We have the same thing here in Seattle where it's every single low-rise building has directional small cells on it just pointing straight down one street because they need to cover that street.
And then you look at, I think Singapore was the one that OpenSignal, you know, singled out. It's the third most densely populated place on the earth, and it has the highest network speeds of all. It averages almost 50 megabits per second for every user. And the third most popular dense place, third most dense population density, that's what I'm trying to say, on the planet. Hmm. If they can do it in Singapore, that means Verizon and AT&T can do it, and they just haven't or won't.
I mean, there's a big difference between a city-state like Singapore and the whole of the United States.
Right, but there's not that big a difference between Singapore and San Francisco or New York or Washington, D.C. So it can be done.
I think it's possible, but you need incentive. You need true competition. Yeah. And you need a very, very different market.
You need another hour on the end of this podcast is what you need.
Yeah. Mm.
True story. Okay, so let's continue on HGC. So before we move on to kind of like the backstory of the U11 Plus, I do want to talk about the U11 Life a little bit because that is coming to the U.S. And there's a couple of versions of this phone, Andrew. What can you tell us about the U11 Life? And is it worth the, what is it, $349 that HGC is asking for it?
So the annoying part about this is it's the exact opposite of the Moto X4 that we just got done looking at, where it's an Android One version of the, you know, sorry, I don't want to confuse it. So the U11 Life, it has an Android One version, and that's the global version. So you're, you know, as a volume, you're going to see more of those phones and more people talking about the Android One version. But in the US and Canada, it has just regular HTC Sense on 7.1.1 Nougat. So, and who knows exactly what the reasoning is behind that, but basically it's a T-Mobile phone in the US, and then they're going to just sell the T-Mobile SKU unlocked from HTC.com in the US and Canada. And so you have to evaluate it three different ways, really. T-Mobile knocks $50 off the price for this phone, which has very, very, you know, just expected specs. So Snapdragon 630, 3 gigs of RAM, 32 gigs storage, 5.2-inch 1080p LCD. It's very, very similar to that Moto X4 that we just got done reviewing for $399. I think that the idea here, obviously, just like the U11 Plus, is to just kind of get onto that U11 train because it's been a somewhat successful phone by HTC standards and they want to just plow through that. The difference is when you try to scale down that brilliant U11 design to something that has to retail for $299 at T-Mobile and still make money is it's all plastic. You get great fit and finish. Everything is perfect in that respect, but it's just super cheap. And you compare that to something like if you're going to buy it unlocked, you're talking $350. You compare that to Moto X4, which is glass and metal and nice. And at the same time, you're not getting Android One in the US, which I think at these lower end devices is way more important. You're talking about a low end device that, you know, it's going to get Oreo within 30 days. We know that. But what about after that? What is HTC, you know, what is their commitment in terms of updates monthly, updates quarterly, yearly, next platform update? You know, that's something that should be taken into account. And then Alex can talk to this a little bit because he's used the Android One version, but the Sense version it's just kind of slow and not really living up to what I came to expect from the Moto X4. So that's kind of my bottom line there, is it's kind of a little disappointing in a few areas.
So a few points of contrast here. I actually have the Android One version now. It's actually just behind me now. I'll be reviewing it next week, I guess. So like Andrew said, it has this sort of plasticky design, and I think, I'm trying to remember the name they gave to it in our briefing. It was something like acrylic glass.
It's an acrylic process, like a layered acrylic process on the back.
Yeah, and I'm like, okay, so is it acrylic or is it glass? Or is it glass? And I guess it's acrylic because it's not quite truly glass.
Feels like hollow plastic.
Yeah, it doesn't feel too bad, though. I mean, it does, like, if you go in there and, you know, start tapping at it and stuff, it does, yeah, it has that more of a plastic kind of feel and sort of resonance to it. I'm pretty much fine with the way it feels and looks, though. I think it's basically fine from that perspective. And something else, I mean, I have the Android One version here, not seen any, admittedly, day one, but I've not seen any performance issues with that. So
yeah,
I'm willing to
bet. It was noticeable from day one on the Sense version that, like, the optimization wasn't there on the Sense one. So I'm happy to hear it.
It's weird. Why would you optimize a software version that's going to be used by, like, 1,000 people for 30 days? It's super weird that they're doing that anyway.
I agree. Yeah, that was smart, actually.
But anyway, yeah, the Oreo version that I have here is, you know, solid, runs nicely for a cheap phone.
My question, and I can't find it anywhere, not from us or anywhere else, so I'm thinking that nobody mentioned it or told anybody. Will this work on the 600 megahertz rural stuff that T-Mobile is going to start rolling out next year? Because the first company that can make a phone that looks nice, runs okay, at the right price, that can work where you live, has a whole slew of customers that have never been able to have it before. I know people that live where they can't have a cell phone.
Do you know what LTE band that is?
It's 71, and no, it doesn't support it.
No, it doesn't have 71.
Okay, so we're still looking, T-Mobile.
Here's the thing. T-Mobile said the two phones would be available by the end of 2017 that supported band 71. The first is the V30 that's already available. The second is, we think, the Galaxy S8 Active for T-Mobile. That hasn't been announced yet, but it passed through the FCC a few days ago, and it's pretty much guaranteed to just show up on T-Mobile's website in the next few days. So that's going to be interesting. But Jerry, I don't know if you recall, Qualcomm announced a few weeks ago that it's made it much easier for vendors mm-hmm. to optimize their phones for band 71.
Right.
And the reason that the V30 supported it, and I'm thinking also the S8 Active, is that the two OEMs actually had to go out and source their own modem right. components. It did use the Qualcomm front end, but there were aspects of it, the transceivers, the antennas, things like that, had to be tuned specifically for band 71. And right now, without Qualcomm's kind of like turnkey solution, it's not easy. Mm-hmm. By the early months of 2018, I mean, it's basically assumed that every single phone released in the U.S. will support it the way that AWS 1 is supported right now, or AWS 3 is coming to most phones. So I see what you're saying, but at the same time, like, Band 71 covers 2 million Americans right now out of like 300 and something that T-Mobile is aiming at. So it's going to take a very long time for even that, like, 600 megahertz spectrum to roll out in any real way to make a difference.
I probably get overly excited because I live near the test market. As soon as I get a phone that can do it, I can take a 13-mile drive and play with it. So that's probably why I care more about it than anyone else does.
I care more about it because, as we know,
Canada.
Well, we haven't auctioned 600 megahertz yet. We will in a couple of years. But it's interesting because T-Mobile and Sprint were rumored to merge, and that deal has apparently fallen by the wayside now because Matayoshi's son has a huge ego and wants to stay in control of the merged company, and that just wouldn't be possible because the board of directors would inevitably give it to Legere, which you know, T-Mobile is a much bigger, well, not Legere, but Deutsche Com or
Deutsche Telekom.
Deutsche Telekom.
Yeah. It's like Deutsche Com. It's Deutsche Bank. But yeah, I'm going on a tangent here, but that's kind of where it stands, is that this is going to be a very interesting story this time next year. But right now it's not.
This is the next step. We talk about emerging markets and companies getting there, but there are huge swaths. Now I've got Daniel disease again.
Swaths.
There are huge places in North America and Asia, Northern Asia, where it's impossible to get self-service because it's just so much of nothing between population centers. And these are the things you need to do to try to alleviate that.
Yeah. Well, we could go again. We could talk for hours. I think Jerry and I should just have a network nerd podcast where you can just talk all about this stuff. That would be super fun for like four people.
Yeah, I'm in.
But yeah,
two of them being you two.
Exactly. So, are we done with U11 Life? I didn't even realize it was available in Canada. It is, because I'm looking on the website of HTC and it's available for $4.49. But
I didn't know it was coming this soon. I thought this was something we were going to see, you know, near the end of the year.
Look, I speaking from the U.S. perspective, because this is very, very clearly just a T-Mobile play, they're going to sell a lot of these. It may be cheap feeling kind of compared to the $400 Moto X4, which I think is leaps and bounds ahead of it in terms of hardware. But for a $299 phone, it looks a whole hell of a lot better than your average $299 phone you get at the carrier that's normally like a Samsung J3.7 or whatever, you know.
LG Sonic Plus Magenta Power. Crazy stuff T-Mobile sells.
Stylo 42. Yeah. Exactly. This is way better than that. And, I mean, it's $12 down and $12 a month. That's what they're trying to sell it as.
Shit. 6 months from now, it'll be $49.
Yeah, seriously.
That's what T-Mobile does. I'm serious. If you go there now, you can find that Samsung and LG that Andrew and I were talking about. You can spend $50 and buy a phone, and they suck. This one won't suck for $50 or $100.
Yeah, so that's kind of the end of the line for it, really. I mean, it's a play where HTC probably wouldn't have even brought this to the U.S., or they would have just kind of half-assedly launched the Android One version here if they didn't have the financial backing of T-Mobile.
I was just talking about the U11 Plus not having any carriers in the UK. This has carriers in the UK, and they're going to be selling it. So if there's anything HTC needs right now, it's just to shift product and to make money. So, yeah.
Yep, this isn't glamorous, but this is the phone they need.
Exactly, and especially the Android One version, where we don't know for a fact that Google's picking up some of the tab, and Google, there's some Google influence there in terms of getting these on shelves, but I'm more than willing to bet that there is some there. So
like, why not bring the Android One version to the U.S.?
Because they're getting T-Mobile money instead, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess, but I mean, isn't the Xiaomi Mi 2A coming to the U.S.?
Or am I wrong about that? I thought it was just the Moto X4 for now.
Oh, and yeah, you're right.
You know what? Let's talk 6 months from now and look at who sold how many. Nobody's buying Android One phones in the United States because it goes back to that carrier thing. You'll spend $250 on one you see at the carrier store for $12 a month instead of buying one online outright for $199. You shouldn't. You should save your money and just buy it outright. But that's not what we do. Even I don't do it.
I think you could see in an alternative, Dimension B timeline where they didn't try to go to T-Mobile or T-Mobile turned them down or something, and they were already making the Android One version, and you know, maybe they went over to Google and got on Project Fi or something, just like the Moto X4. You could see this coming, you know, later on, but playing the game with the carrier and making a, you know, for all intents and purposes, carrier exclusive version of this phone, you take a lot of time and money and engineers away from being able to make it for the open North American market with Android One on it. And, you know, those things are opposed, and T-Mobile has been a pretty good partner for HTC, and obviously they made it work.
And we have said, what, for 3 years now that HTC needs to have a phone that's priced right and a carrier will work with them and they can sell it. If they can't do that, they're never going to turn it around.
The interesting thing is that they couldn't strike any sort of deal for the U11 Plus or the regular U11 in the first place. So.
That's crazy.
I mean, I've seen a few theories there. One is that there's some kind of deal with Sprint stopping them from doing that. The other is that HTC US just looked at how badly the U Ultra must have done earlier in the year and just thought, nope, not doing that again.
Yeah.
I use carriers as Cricket as an example for this. You go to Cricket's website, you go to the smartphones page, everything's available for free or very little money if you sign up for a new plan. They're all phones that made by companies that you know of with names that you've never heard of. LG Fortune, Galaxy Amp 2, Galaxy Soul, Alcatel OneTouch Flint. HTC's there with the Desire 625. We heard of that.
What?
But then there's
Flint.
Then there, yeah,
start Flint. A fire.
And then there's companies like ZTE, and that's the ZTE is a really interesting case study because it is building bespoke phones for carriers at very, very low cost. And what I mean by that is, AT&T owns Cricket. AT&T is going to ZTE and says, "We need a phone to hit all of these marks, and we want to offer it for $99 outright. What can you give us?" And ZTE will turn this around in under 6 months, and it will send them the phone, and it will sell thousands of them. And it is, they're very good.
It'll make money off of every single one.
Absolutely. They're good phones. They have decent software, and they will never receive a single update. The moment you buy that phone, you will never receive a security update or a platform update ever again. But that is the price you pay for buying a $100 Android phone. But ZTE knows how to play the game. HTC somehow forgot how to play the game. And I don't know. I mean, maybe it just doesn't want to play the game anymore.
And this is, again, we talk about Android One. This is exactly the kind of territory that Android One is presumably supposed to play in, where you don't necessarily need to worry so much about platform updates because, okay, although the manufacturer pushes them out with Android One, Google takes all of the heavy lifting out of the equation there.
Supposed to, I think, right?
Yeah.
Right. But at the same time, their debut device in the US was a $400 phone, not a $200 or $100 phone. So it's very, they're kind of not, they're not going head to head with that super cheap market, at least right now.
I don't know. So, Alex, for the last few minutes, let's talk about this interesting thing. That we heard. It started as an article from The Verge about the musky version of the Pixel 2 XL that was canceled earlier this year. Apparently,
by musky, we're talking about the HTC developed a larger Pixel 2 that didn't see the light of day and not just a Pixel 2 with a certain aroma.
M-U-S-K-I-E.
Wait, so you don't like. You can't just tell automatically what I'm talking about when I say the word musky? My goodness. Sorry, you're absolutely right. So let's talk a little bit about that. What can you kind of expand on from the story? Why don't you start at the beginning?
So the article from The Verge kind of... I think to start with, it had kind of a bad headline. The takeaway that a lot of people got from this is that the Musky was cancelled, M-U-S-K-I-E, was cancelled, and that literally turned into the project evolved, and that turned into what we eventually got with the U11 Plus. And based on the information we have,
it's not true.
It's not true.
Down to the motherboard is completely different. Stop.
They right-click the project file, rename. U11 Plus.
The camera is different. The screen technology is different. It's a different phone.
Exactly.
Same shape.
There was some crossover in terms of engineering we hear between those two things. HTC may, I mean, the main thing may be engineering capacity and manufacturing capacity that HTC maybe was preparing to have to put out X million of these musky devices. And instead, some of the engineering work that would have gone into that, and some of the manufacturing capacity that would have gone into that, and potentially even certain design elements that would have gone into that, eventually went into the U11 Plus. There has been some recycling of engineering has happened. But yeah,
it's very easy to look at the U11 Plus and say, okay, this makes sense that this could, you know, that there, it's not a completely different idea.
AndroidCentral.com/HTC-U11-Plus. When you're listening to this, go there. Well, a third of the way down the page, there's a U11 and a U11 Plus sitting beside each other on top of a Chinese Times newspaper, and look at the camera. Now, if you have a Pixel XL, look at the camera on it. These aren't the same phone. They never were the same phone. Alex has nailed it. The people and the ideas that were going to make the other one made this one instead. That doesn't make them the same phone.
Someone's just taken this idea and run with it a little bit too far. I strongly suspect that it was someone in Taiwan that told this to The Verge.
Well, find that person the next time you're there and smack them.
I strongly suspect it was just a case of like wires getting crossed and things being taken a bit too far.
I'm sure.
We know the
guys at The Verge. They're not going to lie to you. They said that because that's what they were told.
Yeah, I know Vlad. Vlad's a nice guy, and I'll happily give him crap about this next time I see him in person. I'm just saying
it's pretty easy to tell what happened here. So
people are taking one, the headline was bad, and two, people are taking it far too literally without really reading the story, which, you know, hey, the internet, people do that.
Well, but also you have to realize that the understanding of how long the development cycles are for these types of things are not quite understood.
You don't just cancel Muskie over the spring and by early fall you have Ocean Master, which is the U11 Plus, ready to go. And actually, it's interesting that we look at these code names. Ocean Master was originally still a thing as of early this year. So for a brief time, like, these two projects existed side by side at HTC. It wasn't a case of one, you know, just straight up turning into the other. For a time, these were in development concurrently.
Yes, and like you were saying, and like I reiterated when we talked about this, was, you know, HTC made the first two Pixels. At some point, there was an idea that they were going to be making both Pixel 2s as well. And, you know, from, you know, supply chain, like, all the expectations, at some point, on some level, they were expecting to make two phones. One that looked like the Pixel 2 and one that looked like the Pixel 2 XL. That also did not happen at some point, the exact way that they expected. And so different things transpired from that point. But I think it's, you know, there is some truth to the fact that you can look at a U11 Plus and you could say, wow, that looks a hell of a lot like a 2XL in terms of just the overall idea of a tall phone with the same exact proportions.
So does the G8, so does everything. I think people are reading too much into
the V30.
You know,
yeah.
When I look at it, I see, Google, what the hell is wrong with you? Why are you so stupid? What were you smoking with the Pixel XL, Pixel 2 XL? When you could have had this. I would love to know that story.
This is different. Well, they couldn't have had that. Right, they never would have had that. The device that was in development did not use that screen. As far as I know, did not use that aspect ratio.
They could have had another HTC device. We've all used them both. I said on day one, small Pixel is best Pixel, and I think everybody on this call will agree. We could have had both Pixels be that best Pixel again. And I would love to know why. This didn't just happen for some, you know, they flipped a coin or they lost a bet. There's a real reason here that we'll never know.
I think it's just to do with the fact that, this is just a theory, but I think it's to do with the fact that you're selling three phones is harder than selling two phones. Apple can do that because it's Apple and because you already have, you know, the scarcity of the iPhone X, which is going to play into people buying pluses again because, you know, people increasingly want bigger phones. On the Google side of things, I've also heard, you know, speculation around, oh, what screen were they going to use in this? Would it have just had the same issue with the LG screen? Were they going to create an LCD Pixel as like a backup? No, Muskie was going to use an AMOLED screen. They had sourced Samsung panels for that, so that's not what happened. Right.
I don't think there was much of an expectation that there were going to be three Pixel 2 variants. It was this, you know, there was going to be two of them, a small one, a large one, who was going to, you know, which company was going to make the large one was the question.
This just doesn't sound that complicated to me. companies are always developing multiple phones at the same time.
I know of at least two failed Nexus submissions that have been turned into other phones that have gone on sale, and that has never been reported.
I know one you don't, so that's three. There are a lot of them, yeah.
But also, just that there are so many similar components in every phone today. We only have so many suppliers of these chips. There are so many ways that you can put together a phone. It's a glass screen, normally a glass or metal back with metal sides. I mean, it's pretty much turnkey these days.
I think the important part to just think about is really long development times required for, you know, for anything you're going to put out in volume. And yeah, I mean, mostly how long the timeline is, and that these decisions can't be made at the last minute. And when I say last minute, even months ahead of time. There, you know, there is a cutoff point where they're saying, like, we're going with this and it's not going to be able to change. It's not like they have phones, you know, coming off the line or halfway down the assembly line and they're like, oh, yeah, let's actually just reflash all of these with Android One instead of, you know, what we were going to do. And like, let's re-laser etch the back to put Android One on it. Like, they don't do that.
And we can't forget that HTC still built one of this year's Pixels and sold 2,000 of its engineers. Well, you don't sell engineers, but you sold
easy
access
there
to those 2,000 engineers for a lot of money. So Google now employs over 2,000 HTC former HTC engineers that worked on the first Pixels and presumably the second Pixels. So the
now
companies
make them
are
work
still,
on the third Pixel.
Yeah, and the companies are still working very closely together. This is not a full stop.
Right. I'm allowed to wish that things had been different. Let me have this.
You are totally allowed to, because I think a lot of people share that feeling.
I know four of them that do.
Excellent.
Admit it. Admit it, boys.
Well, we're almost out of time, because I think all of us want to go and enjoy our Fridays, especially Alex, because it's after midnight now.
It's Saturday. He wants to enjoy his Saturday.
He wants to enjoy his day. So we'll stop there. But before we go, we just want to say a thank you very quickly to our final sponsor, and that is Game Stash. We've talked a lot about gaming today. We talked about the Razer phone. We've talked about gaming on mobile devices. We've talked about how difficult it is for Android developers to really make great experiences because nobody wants to buy games. Game Stash is a way to avoid all that crap. For $4.99 a month and a free 2-week trial, you subscribe. And with that subscription, you get access to hundreds of premium games. Many of them are, you know, in the Android parlance, AAA titles. Things like Mini Metro, Badland, you know, lots of really fun puzzle games, great action games, lots of older games that have been repurposed for Android. You can enjoy really easily for $4.99 a month, and they all are completely in-app purchase free. They have no in-app purchases at all. All of those premium elements that you would spend real money on are available in the game just by being good at it, which is kind of the way it should be, in my opinion. So GameStash.com, try it out. You have to install one app. You sideload this APK. If you've ever sideloaded a version of Nova Launcher or anything else before, this should be super easy. And it's kind of awesome. I really, really like the experience. It's a good good overall experience, and the games are getting better, and there are new games every week. So highly recommend.
And it's curated, guys. This, I know the word sideloading scares a lot of people, but this is curated, especially if your phone has, you know, Nougat or Oreo on it. You're not going to have to worry about, you know, random stuff just because you're sideloading. It's fine.
Well, I mean, we wouldn't advertise sketchy things, obviously.
And the way I see it is, man, $5 a month is worth not having to scour all the pirate sites and try to find games that'll work on your phone if you don't want to pay for them. $5 a month and you don't have to do it anymore. That's, you know, I don't say that on the blog, but if anybody asks me, that's what I tell them. You can quit going to that black market app site that you use that I won't mention. And just for $5 a month, you won't even notice it's gone, and you have all the games there that you want to play.
It's a legit good experience. And the one game that I keep recommending is Evoland. It's an older game that is really full.
Great
it's an
game.
RPG, fantastic experience, and it's available on GameStash. So we'll be highlighting some awesome games in the future. We'll be having our games editor, Mark Legace, on one week to talk about his favorite games. Should be a lot of fun. So check it out. Free 2-week trial at GameStash.com. Okay, guys, I think that's it for this week, unless we want to talk a little bit more about Spectrum, because I know everybody's really excited to talk about Spectrum.
Yeah.
No? Okay. Mm-hmm. So I think we'll end it there. Any last words? Any final thoughts? Any hopes and dreams? Anything else you want to share?
I have been playing with a fidget spinner for the last 5 minutes in front of my bird because he wants to swear really loud. And so
I appreciate. What's his name?
It's a her, and her name is Henry. I don't ask.
I love it. But I love it. Well, we should post a photo of Henry on the blog so that everybody knows what she looks like.
Because
we know what
recording.
Henry looks like.
Yeah.
And she's awesome.
Yeah, you know the kind of things Henry says, too. So that's why I'm sitting here playing with a fidget spinner so she doesn't say them.
Well, I guess thank you. In some ways, I kind of want to hear it, but that would put this over into PG-13 territory, and we can't afford to lose our sponsors, so... Thank you again. All right, Alex, Andrew, Jerry, thanks for being here. This has been the Android Central Podcast. We will be back next week with another episode, and we'll have lots more to cover. Until then, see you later.
Catch you next time.
Adios.
So long.